Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Fascinating Democratic debate last night. We will be getting into the details of that. I thought that there were a few iconic moments, some lessons to be learned for all of us. I thought all three Democrats comported themselves quite well, and it was very, very well done. Interesting, the results of the primaries in Michigan also. We'll be discussing those as we go on throughout the day. In our second hour, the Congressman Robert Wexler is going to be with us, updating us on his efforts to have hearings that might lead to the impeachment of Messrs. Bush and Cheney, or at least Cheney. And in our third hour, we're going to have Ben Shapiro on, and also Steny Hoyer is going to come on and talk about this whole issue of economic, what would you call it, rationality, the budget process and what's going on. Right now, for our first segment, though, I want to start out with Andrew Kleit. Is it Kleit or Kleet? I'm sorry.
Kleet, Tom.
Kleet, Andrew Kleet. He's with the independent.org is the website. He's a research fellow at the Independent Institute and author of Electric Choices, Deregulation and the Future of Electric Power. 75% of the U.S. land area right now is electricity is supplied by nonprofit co-ops. They own and maintain 43% of the nation's electric distribution lines. I don't have numbers on the amount that is utilities that are owned by municipalities and whatnot, but there is a growing trend to deregulate and privatize electric distribution in the United States, and you, I understand, are in favor of that.
Well, I think that there's lots of gains to be made possible by opening up markets in electricity and electricity generation, and in the marketing of electricity, and give you choices as to what electricity products you can buy.
You know, the last time that this got much press was in California, and we had Enron and their buddies coming in, and you know, those god-awful quotes of the people saying, you know, let's screw grandma. And I mean, how can you deregulate an industry that basically is a natural monopoly?
Well, there are parts of the industry that are natural monopolies. There's the distribution of power. You don't want more than one electricity line running down the street to your house. And the transmission of power has natural monopoly attributes. But there are lots of people who can generate power, and there's no reason to think that generation of power is a natural monopoly. And there's no reason to think that you need a monopolist to choose what products are available to you as a consumer.
Well, no, but with we the people, when we're talking about something that has to do with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and I defy somebody in this day and age to be free or happy or even stay alive without any electricity coming to their house, you know, on an unanticipated basis for some period of time, I'd say this is very much part of the commons. You look at what happened in 96 when California deregulated electricity. You know, within 4 years, you had Enron just whipsawing the market, you know, creating all these rolling blackouts that had never happened before. The data so far that I'm seeing is that in deregulated states, what you're arguing for, that the electric prices are just going through the roof. Obviously, you know, you've got for-profit corporations. They've got to pay dividends to their stockholders, huge salaries to their CEOs and whatnot. In Maryland, homeowners, 72% rate hike just this last summer. They're freaking out. It's suddenly a major issue in the governor's race. In Delaware, Delparma Power, as soon as it was deregulated, they jumped 59%. In New England, where I used to live in Vermont, Vermont is the only New England state which is still regulated, and it's the only one that still has stable electric prices. Everywhere else, they're jumping 15-20% a year.
Well, what you see in California is exactly the wrong way to do it. They set up a system that was subject to manipulation, and perhaps more importantly, a system that drove the distribution companies into bankruptcy. And then you had a position where no one wanted to sell power to distribution, and then you had blackouts, and you had a great mess. And in Oregon, I think there's no way you can get around California in a lot of issues. And I think it caused a lot of problems for people in Oregon as well. In some of those other states, I don't think the story is quite the way you told it. In Maryland, what they did was a very clever way. They refused to let the gas, higher prices roll into the system, and they instead had price increases happen all at once. And, you know, with the price of oil going up and all electric power, all electric power prices are going to go up, and that's just something that I'm afraid we have to live with, and it's hard to hide.
Well, yes and no. I mean, in a regulated environment, the regulators, the representatives of the people can say, okay, you know, the price is going up. Here's how much we're going to let you increase your profits as a consequence. I mean, look at with gasoline. Right now, the price of oil has gone up. And so the oil companies are using that as an excuse to jack up the price of gasoline. And ExxonMobil just in the last quarter, they were more profitable than any corporation in the history of planet Earth. I mean, going back to the Roman Empire, they were more profitable. That's a deregulated marketplace. I mean,
I got to tell you that in some markets, you're going to make money. And if you own oil wells,
you won't make money. But if it's a monopoly and a natural monopoly, A, and B, if it has to do with the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the core commons issues, then I think it's entirely appropriate for government to say, yes, you can make a profit, but no, you can't make an obscene profit. We're going to regulate this.
Well, in what you've seen in electricity is that for a long time, the government said, not only can you make a profit, but you can make a guaranteed profit. And so
right. People
in Pennsylvania and Washington State, where you are, paid a lot for cost overruns. I don't know what utility you have there in Oregon, but I think a lot of people in Oregon are paying a lot of money for these whoops price overruns in nuclear power.
Well, I think, frankly, we're getting screwed because we've got PGE, the remnant of Enron, and it's privatized. And when we tried to make it a public company, when the city tried to buy it, they played all kinds of games to prevent that from happening. Even when the city made a reasonable offer to buy it and turn it public, make it into a public utility. So, you know, the bottom line is, why should something as critical as electricity be in private hands where the profit motive is driving it rather than the delivering high-quality electricity is driving it?
Well, here in Pennsylvania and other places, we have profit motive driving electricity, and we have very stable electricity supply. I'm sitting in my office here. I teach at Penn State. And, you know, there's an awful lot of products in the economy that people depend on, including gasoline, including food, that are left open to the free market. And so I don't think that your argument here that people depend on it, if we took that seriously, then everything would be run by the government.
No, not at all. I don't want the government telling people who make TVs what kind of profit that they can make. I don't want the government telling computer manufacturers what kind of profit. Those are not part of the commons. Those are not natural monopolies. But with electricity, water, sewage, the roads, you know, our highway system, our infrastructure, our transportation system, frankly, I think that, you know, what we have seen and what we saw before 1980 when air travel was regulated. I was in the travel industry in the 1980s and, you know, throughout that deregulation period. What we've seen in transportation, the trucking industry, truckers are getting wiped out. The trucking industry is a mess right now as a consequence of deregulation. Wherever you have these natural monopolies and you say, okay, we're going to throw it open to competition, what ends up is you have a small number of very large companies that come in and basically screw the people.
Well, I don't think I would agree with that. We've seen lots of gains in lots of areas. Certainly trucking isn't a natural monopoly. The definition of a natural monopoly is it less costly for one firm to supply the product than for many firms to supply the product? And that certainly doesn't make sense in trucking. It actually doesn't make sense in airlines. It doesn't take sense in electric generation.
Well, where it comes into place with trucking and also with airlines, I mean, arguably they're separate, and we could make separate arguments for them. But with regard to trucking, it's I want a regulator to say you cannot drive more than 8 or 9 hours a day.
You can have a regulator say that, and that's great, and that has nothing to do with natural monopoly, Tom.
Yeah, well, okay, perhaps it's an imperfect example, but let's stick with electricity because you're arguing for the deregulation of electricity. And we're talking with Andrew Kleit, by the way. Independent.org is his website, research fellow at the Independent Institute, and we have just a little less than a minute left. Andrew, is this going to become an issue in the presidential race?
Oh, I don't think so. These things are really done at the state-by-state-by-state issue, and I think any smart federal politician will stay away from this.
You don't think that this is the essence of the Republican agenda?
Get
government out of your lives?
I don't see it at all in the Republican agenda, and here in Pennsylvania, actually, it was Democrats who led the charge for restructuring.
That's very interesting. Very interesting. Well, we'll see how it shakes out. It's going to be a very interesting time as we go forward, and I guess we'll just have to leave it. What percentage, by the way, do you know what percentage of utilities in the United States are investor-owned as opposed to citizen-owned?
Well, a large majority of the equity value in the people served is done by investor-owned utilities, probably 75-80%. But as you point out, there's a big cooperative sector and a big municipal utility sector as well.
Yeah, okay. Andrew Clyte, independent.org, the website. Research fellow at the Independent Institute, author of Electric Choices. Andrew, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back with an analysis of what happened last night in the Democratic debate and your calls, 866-303-2270.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
The workers still got screwed. It was our intention to build the working dude right out of his pension. We're Enron. When Dick Cheney needs power solutions, we are there to discuss. Yeah, Enron. We gave Bush lots of big contributions. Now he's working for.
Wonders of deregulation. Anyhow, last night, the Democratic debate, this I thought this was fantastic. There was an iconic moment. And what boggled my mind is this morning we were looking all over the place for this clip and just to see who was reporting on this thing. And the fully expecting when Hillary Clinton made this statement, my immediate. Well, here, let me just play it for you. Here it is. This is Hillary Clinton last night during the debate.
President Bush is over in the Gulf now, begging the Saudis and others to drop the price of oil. How pathetic!
And then she goes on and talks about how we need an energy policy. I mean, that is the perfect soundbite, and I fully expected that would be on CNN, MSNBC, NBC, at least NBC and MSNBC. It would be on their websites. It would be on the newscast. People would be playing. It would be all over the place. I couldn't find it anywhere. I mean, there's a clip of it, you know, on YouTube. It's had 135 views, but I mean, it's like it wasn't anywhere. And it was this, and that was the moment when one of the Democratic candidates, now all of them did and to a certain extent, but that was where one, and specifically in this case, Hillary Clinton, God bless her, where one of the Democratic candidates said, we're going to take this a step beyond just the differences between the three of us and differentiate ourselves from the Democrats and say, this is how we're so different. And I thought that was great. The other big carry home message that I got from last night, I mean, there was obviously the different things, you know, Barack Obama, nuclear energy. He seemed to be nuancing his position. He has apparently a large nuclear company in Illinois, a bunch of nuclear plants and people who are involved with that company bundling money for him. But basically, setting aside the nuclear issue where John Edwards is saying, I'm the only guy here who is not in favor of nuclear power, which I continue to think is a true statement. And setting aside the race and gender thing, which is, I think, frankly, a canard and was being hyped by the press. I think that whole thing was a creation of the press, not of the Obama and Clinton campaigns, in my personal opinion. And of course, I should add, you think you've seen problems or battles that have to do with race and gender now. You wait until the Republicans get a hold of either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, if one of them is the nominee. You ain't seen nothing yet. But setting that aside, the big carry-home message for me was that Barack Obama made it very clear that he's running these positions. Barack Obama made it very clear, and he's made it clear throughout his campaign, and I love this rhetoric, that he's running to get people into the process and involve people. He wants to bring people not just into his cabinet. He wants to get the entire nation energized. That, to me, is a very inspiring message. Hillary Clinton is running as a leader. Now, we need that, too. I mean, that's what Franklin Roosevelt did. Franklin Roosevelt said, damn it, it's my way or the highway. Here's what we're going to do. Now, he brought together a wise and diverse group of people. But he led this country in a very difficult time. John Kennedy reached out and called for all of us. And John Edwards, his message is that is kind of a synthesis of the two. He is going to be there for the average working person, and he's going to lead this country in a positive and new direction. But mostly that he's going to take on the entrenched special interests. He's going to shake up Washington, D.C. in a way that you ain't seen since 1907 and Teddy Roosevelt, or arguably Franklin Roosevelt after 1936. And all of those messages, I just, you know, put this on the table. All of those messages, I think, are reasonable. They all appeal to me. And having watched that debate last night, any one of those three people would, in my opinion, make a very, very good president of the United States. I would vote for any one of the three of them in a heartbeat. And you know, it's a virtual certainty one of these three is going to be our nominee. And I'd say a coin toss that one of the other two is going to be the vice presidential candidate. And we're in good shape. The Republicans, on the other hand, I mean, what a tragedy what happened over on the Republican side. I mean, it was just an absolute debacle what happened over on the Republican side. Mitt Romney carrying Michigan. And, of course, you know, this whole thing with the Coase, well, you know, let's get Romney out there in front because he's the guy who's beating up on the other Republicans. At a certain level, I'm saying be careful what you wish for. Romney has hired the PR firm in South Carolina that Karl Rove had hired in 2000 to do the slash and burn on John McCain. The push polls implying that John McCain's Bangladeshi adopted daughter was actually the product of an out-of-wedlock liaison with an African-American woman. Mitt Romney has hired that same company. Mitt Romney has put millions of dollars of his own money into this thing. He is a win at any cost, say anything, do anything, just give me the power guy. And that, frankly, concerns me. And so, you know, there are a lot of people who, and Marco's one of them, saying, Mitt Romney, he's kind of a buffoon. You know, that's what we thought about Ronald Reagan also. You know, he was a Democrat. He was a union leader. How can he run as a Republican? Be careful what you wish for.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Back 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Tomorrow and Friday, by the way, Laura Flanders, one of my favorite people, is going to be in here guest hosting for me. Louise and I are finally going to take a few months late on our 35th wedding anniversary. I was traveling someplace on the air and she was home, and so we're going to hop on a plane for London, actually. We head over there just for the weekend, for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And although last night I tried to check into my flight online electronically, and it said, that flight you can't check into. So I called United, and I said, wait a minute, I can't check into this flight, and the woman's like, oh, don't worry, everything's fine. Let me connect you with the online people. And so she connected me with the online people, and I got some guy in Bombay or in Hyderabad. And he says, oh, I'm looking at this, and it looks like they put a gate hold on it. Maybe this is going to be canceled. So I called back the reservations people. I said, I think my flight's going to be canceled. And she said, well, it's not showing on my computer, but if you want to change to another flight, it'll cost you $3,000. And I'm like, oh, no. So, because we're trying to do this thing on frequent flyer miles. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I may have some wild and crazy stories to tell you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. We'll get to you in just a second. I just, some of the analyses of yesterday's vote. Barack Obama, I think it's great that Tim Russert brought, as I recall it was Russert, brought up the issue of the email that has circulated. I think everybody in America has seen this thing by now, because it has been so widely and heavily driven frankly, I believe, by Republicans, suggesting that Barack Obama is secretly a Muslim and that he's part of a Muslim cabal and that he was sworn in on the Quran and all this, which are all lies. It was Keith Ellison, the Muslim congressman, Democratic congressman from Minnesota, who was actually all of them are sworn in on the Constitution. We're talking about the photo op afterwards. Keith Ellison is the guy who, for the photo op, chose Thomas Jefferson's Quran. Barack Obama, for the photo op, chose a Bible. He's a Christian. And he made and he addressed that last night. I thought it was great that Tim brought that up.
It may not come as news to you that there's a lot of false information about you circulating on the Internet.
Oh, not Tim. It was
one email in particular, usually once several weeks. We've received three of them this week. This particular one alleges, among other things, that you are trying to hide the fact that you're a Muslim, that you took the oath of office on the Quran and not the Bible, that you will not pledge allegiance to the flag or generally respect it. How does your campaign go on about combating this kind of thing?
Well, look, first of all, let's make clear what the facts are. I am a Christian. I have been sworn in with a Bible.
I figured.
I pledge allegiance and lead the Pledge of Allegiance sometime in the United States Senate when I'm presiding.
So there you go. I mean, you know, it's just it's a pack of lies. You can go over to Snopes.com and you can see it's debunked. Even though the email always starts as like, check this out with Snopes. It's proven. It's true. It's like, oh, yeah. Also, in the Michigan primary, the Democratic end of it, this analysis, I thought this was interesting. It's off the Huffington Post. Among black voters, Clinton was crushed by uncommitted 70-26. Among African-American voters in Michigan. And if that's the case, South Carolina, where about half the Democratic registered voters are African-Americans, is going to be very problematic for Hillary Clinton. And also, she ran poorly among young voters of all races, according to the exit poll analysis that we've seen. So Barack Obama, John Edwards, rising stars, Hillary Clinton. Well, we'll see. Time will tell. 1-866-303-2270. Randy in New York City, listening on WWRL. Hey, Randy.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a minor quibble with your characterization that whoever is the nominee will choose one of the other two at a coin toss for I don't mean that they would cost a coin, but that was your expression, for who would be vice president, because I actually think that there's a method to the madness, and when you see Obama being characterized as this big picture orator of Shakespearean quality who can, you know, he's getting the reputation for not dealing in specifics and setting more broad policy, and Hillary sort of, and I don't know whether these are fair or not, but this seems to be the way people interpret it, and I think it's fairly true. And Hillary has been accused of possibly triangulating, but certainly has shown in her Senate experience that she can reach across the aisle and compromise somewhat in the manner
of she's the
her
policy wonk.
Which suggests to me that she would be far more effective as the majority leader, and that he could do the big picture vision leading us across the cliff to greatness or to land of milk and honey, and all he would need is to pick somebody in the way that Bush Jr. did, which adds some gravitas. He should pick somebody like Biden, who to me is the most presidential of all of them, whatever that means. So that, you know, unfortunately, it's not quite the same setup as if the roles were reversed to set us up.
Yeah, I agree with your analysis, Randy. Here's what I was thinking when I said that, and it really was only one specific situation, and that was, and I was talking with Carl Wolfson about this on our morning show here on KPOJ here in Portland. And this, so I should credit Carl with this as his original suggestion. But I think that it's a solid one. If Hillary Clinton is the nominee, she would probably be very wise to put Barack Obama on as her vice presidential candidate. If Barack Obama is the nominee, I doubt Hillary Clinton would take it, frankly. And I'm not sure that he would be wise to put her on. I agree with you. I think that Joe Biden or Bill Richardson would be a good candidate. If John Edwards gets it, his best choice would probably be Bill Richardson, although one of the other two might work. But you're absolutely right. There's a lot of calculation that goes into this thing. Into picking a vice presidential candidate. So, anyhow,
but it keeps us on our toes.
It sure does. Randy, thanks a lot for the call. Eddie in Northridge, California. Hey, Eddie.
How you doing, Tom?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's up? Especially if I get out of an airplane today. I'll get better.
I was watching the debates last night, as I'm sure a lot of people were, and there was one moment that really kind of stuck out to me, and it was a moment where I believe it could have been Brian Williams or it could have been Tim Russert. They asked them what their greatest weakness was. Right. And I found it interesting that Obama very quickly said, well, I have a problem with, sort of the logistical organization, and I have a hard time, my desk is a mess and everything. And yet when you ask Clinton and Edwards a similar question, Edwards said, oh, I get too angry when I see, the injustices that are done on the American.
Yeah, he essentially said, I'm too compassionate.
Exactly. And
or too empathetic.
Hillary said, I care too much, and sometimes it hurts too much, and I get too emotionally invested, and it was eye-opening for me because it kind of encapsulated this entire presidential race and sort of what the potential with an Obama presidency is, in the sense that frankly, whether you like Clinton or Edwards, and then I'm a fan of both, but that was both of those were very calculated, politically aimed responses. Whereas with Obama, I felt there was a moment of true introspection and a moment of true self-awareness there. And it's, on the one hand, it was so refreshing for me because my whole life I've been waiting for a politician to have that sort of frankness and have that sort of intellectual honesty.
I agree. I wrote in my first book on ADD, ADD, A Different Perception, I wrote a chapter or a part of a chapter about Jack Kennedy. And I think it was in that book. It's in one of my ADD books anyway. And I went back to William Manchester's biography, the very first and the only biography of Jack Kennedy that was authorized by the Kennedy family. It was written in 62 while Kennedy was still alive. Jackie edited it. And he talked about how Jack's desk was an absolute disaster. At the end of every day, he had a squad of three people who had to come in and reorganize his desk. That every place he went, he left clutters of papers. He was constantly losing combs and having to borrow them from people when he was on the campaign trail. They always carried extra combs because he just couldn't keep track of anything. He was always losing everything. And, in my book, I characterize him as a high-functioning person with ADD. But Barack Obama, when he said that, I thought, my God, not only does he talk like Jack Kennedy, but he behaves like him.
He has the same affliction.
But the
thought I had coming away from that was, on the one hand, I was so it was like a breath of fresh air to hear that sort of honesty. But on the other hand, I was sort of afraid of how was the average American voter going to view that.
Right. It's a crummy question to ask a candidate. First of all, I mean, for the press to say, what is the thing that your opponent can use to beat the bejesus out of you with? I mean, that's just a crummy thing. And you got to consider the source, I suppose. Eddie, thanks for the call. And as I said, just you think things are tough now. Wait until the Republicans get into the race. It is going to be absolutely mind boggling. Nora in Minneapolis. Hey, Nora, just about a minute before the break. What's up?
Oh, hey, I just wanted to make sure, and you've already have, that somebody would mention the extremely important issue about nuclear power, the candidates' positions, because I had been heartbroken to see that all my favorite people from the anti-nuclear movement were supporting John Edwards under the supposedly assumption that Obama is for nuclear power, but he last night explained his position to be that if it was proven, in other words, his position was saying, I don't know everything about nuclear power yet.
I thought that was a weasel statement, Nora, frankly. And he said, ultimately, he said, let's let the free market decide it. The free market already has. The only way nuclear power can exist.
I thought he said if it was proven to be safe and proven to be that it wouldn't cost a lot.
Yeah, he said that. He said that, and he said, let's let the free market. And the Price-Anderson Act says that there is no free market for nuclear power. You and I pick up the tab because no insurance company on earth will insure a power plant. Period. It is already a dead technology.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
Well, I know what's right. I got just one life. In a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I stand my ground.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, brought to you by you, our listeners, supporting our sponsors. Particularly, listen to the sponsors on your local program, on your local station. Let them know that you're listening. Let them know that you support the program. Also brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
You know it's nice when the postman has a letter in his sack for you.
And we get mail. Our comment line, 202-536-5306, and here's one.
I'm a conservative Republican. I listen to right-wing and left-wing radio shows, and I find that there's a lot in common. One is illegal immigration. Two is control the borders. Three is that NAFTA, SPP, and North American Union are not good for U.S. workers. And four is whether we go right or left right now, we will still get a corporate fascist government. Nick in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Well, thank you. Nice to hear from a conservative. So, back to our telephones, our thoughts, your thoughts here on the Tom Hartman program, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And John in Elwood Park, New Jersey, listening on WWRL. Hey, John.
Yeah, how you doing?
Just great.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You're my savior.
Well, I'm definitely not that, but hopefully I'm doing a decent talk radio show. What's up, John?
Okay, anyhow, I watched a debate last night, and annoyed me when I started off with this race stuff. You know, there's more important things to talk about, and it was, like, over after about 10 minutes. And then Tim Russert stepped in, and another 5 minutes, it kept going on and on.
I know. There was some guy in the audience yelling, "You guys keep asking race-based questions," or something like that. He was, I don't know exactly what the heckler was saying, but...
And really, when it all boils down, all Hillary said was that Martin Luther King worked on it, and then he can't pass no laws, and then Johnson passed the law for it.
Right. Yeah.
That was
And Johnson was the elected official.
Party by it.
Yeah, and I, as I said, this A, it's a tempest in a teapot, and B, I am not convinced, persuaded. It's possible, but I frankly don't think that these two campaigns are the ones that ginned this whole thing up. I think it was the media. I think that it was, you know, leading quite. Hey, so and so just said, how do you interpret that? What do you think about that? And you feed these people leading questions, and of course, then you're going to get a response. But the media, frankly, in my opinion, has been driving so much of this thing from day one. The media decides who they want to run. I mean, we're talking five or six corporations that control 90% of everything everybody in America sees, hears, and reads outside of what's on the internet.
I'm just calling them out one after another. First, I had Dow Jones. I sold that. I got rid of the what do you call it? The Wall Street Journal. I got rid of that. Yeah. And now I'm getting rid of the New York Times.
Yeah, the paper that I'm reading more and more, I mean, the first paper I read every morning right now is the Financial Times. It's such
London,
a shame.
Right?
Yeah, it's out of London. They have door-to-door delivery here in the United States. At 4 o'clock in the morning,
Times,
I come in here, and it's the Financial Times is waiting for me, and that's the first thing I read.
New York Times just hired Bill Kristol.
Yeah. Yeah, and
they're going to pay to listen to him.
And they were the leading cheerleaders for the war in Iraq, for the invasion of Iraq.
He's a neocon.
So, yeah, well, but not just Kristol. I mean, the New York Times in general on their front page,
they were cheering for it.
It wasn't just Judy Miller. It was also Gordon. I forget his first name. I think it was Michael Gordon as well. But anyhow, John, I got to move along. Thanks for your call, Scott in Chicago. Hey, Scott.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm just great. What's up?
Just comments on the debate. You brought up your iconic moment with Hillary's, and I thought she did capture some sensibility with that for sure.
Yeah, I just wish all three of them had done, if a third of the debate had been each one of the three of them taking turns, taking pot shots at the Republicans, I would have been a whole lot happier, because I think that is a much better strategy for the Democrats right now.
And I just also wanted to point out a couple good ones that Barama actually managed to get in there. One striking to me was that they were discussing it towards the end, their initiative for getting out of Iraq, and Edwards wanted to put Obama on the spot, and a little give and take there. And in the final analysis, Obama really, in what I thought was a very incisive moment, said, you know what, I think there's no difference but with a distinction, and was willing to commiserate with Edwards' point of view on that, and
he came across
his proclivity for the kind of leader and the kind of guy that he would actually be in the office. And really
Barack Obama came across as a real genuine guy last night. As I said, I was impressed, frankly, by all three of them, each one for very different reasons. And I'm very, very pleased that in November of this year, I'll be voting for a Democrat, and it's going to probably be one of these three people. Thank you very much, Scott, for the call. Ryan, also in Chicago. Hey, Ryan.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Just great. What's up?
So I wanted to throw out a comment basically about a lot of the comments I've heard from your callers as well as other programs on Air America and other national programs and about the candidates. And really I continue to hear people read into these candidates and use these very heuristic approaches to judging the quality of a candidate. I mean, a perfect example of this is everybody's emphasis on Hillary's crying in New Hampshire and what that means. And
yeah, I think this, again, was an example of the media creating something.
Correct. And they're completely exploiting these tendencies for us to use these very simple approaches to judging our candidates versus using, you know, hard data, voting records.
You're absolutely right. And that's because, you know, ever since 78 when Reagan did away with the Fairness Doctrine and 87 and 96 when Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act, we have not had news in the United States. We've had infotainment. We have a Paris Hilton culture, and we are now having Paris Hilton politics.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I know we've got a bunch of very informed callers on this program and others on Air America, but I still continue to hear that and try to read into the candidates, but I want to encourage people to look beyond some of those very simple approaches and go delve into their voting records, into their published policies, and these other pieces of hard data that might.
Well said, Ryan. But here's the kicker: 93% in the general election, 93% of people say that their decisions are made based on their gut feelings, not on any specific issue.
So unfortunate.
Yeah, it really is. And it's an indication, I read about this in Cracking the Code at some length. It's an indication of the nature of politics in America today, which at some level is an indication of the media, although I would suggest that it's also an indication of human nature. I don't think it's been 97% forever, but it's always been important.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman Program. Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from coast to coast from K-Talk in Los Angeles to WWRL in New York City and all places in between. Welcome back to the program. Congressman Robert Wexler on the line with us, representing Florida's 19th District, one of the real heroes, one of the real champions. And characterized as out of the mainstream, but I would say it's absolutely the bedrock notion of American democracy, the rule of law. WexlerWantsHearings.com, hearings that might, well, actually, Congressman Wexler, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
Rather than my trying to characterize your position, let me let you characterize your position.
Well, you would probably do a much better job, Tom, so I would defer to you, but let me take a stab at it. What I'm trying to do is simply get the House Judiciary Committee to open up hearings regarding the very serious and substantive allegations that have been made against Dick Cheney, which relate to the precise powers of the vice presidency. These are the things I think we need to inquire about, whether the vice president manipulated intelligence, which brought us into war in Iraq on false pretense, whether or not he knowingly ordered the illegal use of torture, whether the vice president exposed covert agents for political purposes, and whether he and his subordinates obstructed federal investigations by ignoring subpoenas, and to examine how the vice president has abused executive privilege. And one of the things that I think some people are not aware of, that the Bush-Cheney team has abused executive privilege far more than any other administration in history, in my view. And the one aspect of impeachment hearings that is different than all other hearings or congressional inquiries is that executive privilege is not available to the administration.
Right. This was the Nixon versus the United States Supreme Court decision.
That's right. And what I also like to remind people when they say, well, it's too late to have hearings or there aren't enough votes to have impeachment, is that the Watergate tapes in the Nixon era did not emerge until after hearings had begun.
Right. And
so who knows what will happen if we start
hearings? Right. And when those hearings began, all of the Republicans and a couple of the Democrats, if my recollection of history is correct, I was alive and aware at the time, were opposed to the impeachment, but they were willing to go ahead with the hearings. Once those tapes came out, the House Judiciary Committee, virtually everybody on it suddenly said, OK, that's it. I mean, once the evidence was there, how do you deny it?
Well, that's my whole point. I have not predetermined the outcome. I think the evidence needs to determine where we go. If there isn't the evidence to support impeachment, then Dick Cheney should not be impeached.
Yeah.
But if there is, then I believe we have a constitutional obligation to follow through.
This is, you know, I've been to a number of town hall meetings with various congressmen, and we have three or four that are within, I'd say, a 20-mile radius of where I live here in Portland, Oregon, and around the country as well, others. And of course, Bernie Sanders is on this show every single week and has been for 5 years. And I've been to it, and I used to live in Vermont. I've been to a lot of town hall meetings that Bernie does. And invariably, members of Congress are confronted with people who are standing up and literally shouting, you know, impeach the bums, impeach Bush, impeach Cheney. And after a while, it really wears down a lot of folks. I know there was an event here in Portland recently where this kind of thing happened, where a member of Congress showed up and really got it. And, I mean, really got taken to task. And and correct me if I'm wrong on this. Tell me if my political calculus is wrong. What I have been recommending to my listeners and to the people who participate in politics is, instead of calling Nancy Pelosi's office or your member of the House of Representatives, an impeachment has to start in the House, so it'd be a House member, or John Conyers' office as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Instead of calling and saying, "Damn it, impeach these bums! I'm so sick of it!" You know, I mean, I've actually had people say, "I'm gonna call for Pelosi's impeachment because she won't impeach them."
No.
What we should be saying instead is, instead of saying impeach them, we should be saying, let's find out what crimes were committed and whether those crimes are impeachable offenses. Let's hold hearings. And when we call our elected representatives in a very reasonable way, or at their town hall meetings in a very reasonable way, say, would you please support hearings into the possibility that crimes were committed that may or may not warrant impeachment? Frankly, my sense of it is that it is taken in a completely different and far more rational way by politicians.
Well, I would agree, and that's what I have been calling for. And I established a website, the title of which is WexlerWantsHearings.com, and asked people to sign their name to a call for hearings. And we've had over 190,000 people who have signed up.
I'm one of them.
And well, thank you very, very much. And that's the whole point. What we want is an inquiry. What we want is the House of Representatives to fulfill its constitutional obligation, its responsibility, to find out the truth, to find out the facts. And I think for what people should seek is a sober, rational, impartial hearing where all sides are presented, where all sides are given an opportunity. And I would respectfully suggest that that's how people should go about interacting with their elected officials, just as you described.
Right, and where the power of the congressional subpoena can be used and the shield of executive privilege cannot be used, so that we can actually get to the truth of matters. I mean, this is just the bottom line stuff. Congressman Wexler, Dennis Kucinich was not part of the hearings or the debate last night. He's been marginalized in large part by the mainstream media, although also his candidacy is not pulling large numbers. But he has put forward a bill in Congress calling for, as I understand or as I read it, the actual impeachment of Dick Cheney rather than just the hearings for the impeachment.
Yes.
How is that different from what you're doing? Do you distance yourself from that or do you embrace that? And do you think that I guess that's enough.
Well, first of all, I applaud Mr. Kucinich for taking the leadership role that he has very vigorously pursued. He has been very steadfast in illuminating and highlighting for the American people the abuses that this administration have persistently exercised in the White House and in the Vice President's office. It's not a question of me distancing. It's just a question, as you put it earlier, what is, in my view, the best way to go about holding the Bush administration, holding the Vice President accountable? And I believe the best way of doing that is holding hearings. But I would not have gotten to where I am, quite candidly, if Mr. Kucinich had not forced the issue on the floor of the House
yep.
the way he did several weeks ago. So I see my effort as being in concert with his, but just asking for hearings to begin.
Right.
And I applaud what he's done.
The website is Wexler Wants Hearings, W-E-X-L-E-R, wantshearings.com. We're talking with Congressman Robert Wexler of Florida's 19th District. Sir, we have a minute and a half or so, 2 minutes. I'm curious your thoughts on the state of the debate among the Republican or the Democratic candidates at the moment and whether this issue in particular is ever going to become part of the mainstream discussion in the Democratic Party.
Well, I would like it to become, well, you know what, let me go back a step, you know, in some ways repeat what you said at the beginning of you know, you're introducing me on the show. This is mainstream in the American public. It's not mainstream yet in the New York Times or the Washington Post. It may not be mainstream in the context of elected officials in Washington, but amongst Americans, the polling is extraordinary. And I plead guilty myself, quite frankly, Tom. I was one of those members of Congress who was behind the eight ball on this. And I went back to my district and had a couple of town hall meetings, just like you described. And I listened to people and I listened to their passion and I listened to the specific allegations that they were making. And it made me rethink my initial reaction, which was, let's not hold hearings, let's not do this. And I became convinced that now was the time and that Congress had an obligation to do these hearings. And there have been several groups that have been pushing it, like Democrats.com and AfterDowningStreet.org.
Sir, the machine is cutting us off, but I just want to thank you so much. WexlerWantsHearings.com, Congressman Robert Wexler.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
Past the hour, Tom Hartman with you, and strange stuff going on out there. I'll tell you our Jaws alert for the day. We actually have several. Number one, Antarctic ice loss jumps 75% in 1 year. As Joseph Rahm notes, the global warming deniers just can't catch a break. Vast areas of the Antarctic ice sheet, which has 10 times as much ice as Greenland, is losing mass much faster than anyone expected. The rate of ice loss has quickened in the last decade. In fact, 2007's ice loss was 75% higher than 2006. Geez, it's almost like, I don't know, the whole planet is melting. Yeah, okay, that's number one. Here's another one for you. It's Microsoft. This is in the Times Online. Microsoft is developing Big Brother-style software capable of remotely monitoring a worker's productivity, physical well-being, and competence. This will be a wireless sensor in your computer at work that is measuring your heart rate, body temperature, bodily movement, facial expressions, and your blood pressure. So your employer will know, are you stressed? Are you doing your job? Are you having a good time? You know, perhaps they can tell the difference between when you're playing free cell and when you're doing something else. And there's a trifecta of JAWS alerts here. There's a third one, Wi-Fi users beware. This from today's Wall Street Journal. And I got to tell you, I actually have some personal experience with this. I've seen this a couple of times. I noticed this when I was in the Manchester, New Hampshire airport, when I was coming back from New Hampshire from the primary last week. I'm sitting in the airport. They've got Wi-Fi. It's called something like Fly Manchester or whatever. So I open up my laptop, and I look at the Wi-Fi options, and there's the Fly Manchester, and it's got the little icon next to it, like this is a access point. And then there's another one called Universal Free Access, and then there's another one below that called Free Wi-Fi Access. And both of them show as being computer-to-computer connections. Well, what these are people who are trying to steal your information. There's two big scams. They're called the Evil Twin Scam and the Man in the Middle. The Evil Twin one is where somebody will set up a laptop, or in some cases, if they want to get really sophisticated, particularly if they can get to a power outlet in a public place that's inconspicuous, they'll actually plug in a Wi-Fi hotspot. And they will give it a similar name. They'll, like in Portland, it's Fly PDX. So they might just give it that exact same name, only capitalize the first letter so there's not an obvious conflict. And people log on thinking that they're logging on to the actual one when in fact they're not. That's and very often then what it does is it immediately directs you to a page that looks like or even is the real page of the other site. The difference though is that every piece of information that you send or receive through your computer, including all your passwords and if you're doing any online banking or checking your flights or checking your email, all of that stuff they intercept. And the other one, if you log on a computer-to-computer basis, they can actually go in and read your hard drive. They can go in and read all your stuff. And so there's this whole piece in today's Wall Street Journal about how this is happening all over the place. I have seen these. I've been doing a lot of traveling, as you know, those of you listening regularly know, and I have seen these things all over the place, these phony Wi-Fi hotspots. I've figured out how to spot them. But I'm telling you, keep your eyes open, man. We live in bizarre times, and virtually nobody is getting prosecuted for this. This is a crime that is still, as of this moment, under the radar. Okay, the top, our iconic moment for last night. This should be being played on the national media over and over and over again, and I guarantee you it won't be, so I will do it here.
President Bush is over in the Gulf now begging the Saudis and others to drop the price of oil. How pathetic.
Yeah, and apparently in addition to begging them, he's bribing them. He just said, oh, and by the way, we'll sell you billions of dollars of weapons that the American people probably would rather not see all these billions of dollars of weapons going to the Saudis who are supporting the Wahhabists who are, et cetera. But anyhow. Michael in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Michael, we got a minute before the break at the bottom of the hour. What's up?
Okay, this is great. On the impeachment hearing.
Yes, sir.
Are they having hearings instead of impeachment?
Yes.
Impeachment is the mother of all hearings. And I'm, as a citizen, watching our executive branch not honor the congressional subpoenas.
Yep.
How are you going to have a hearing?
Well, you obviously, if you're going to hold the hearings, you're going to have to enforce the subpoenas. Congressman Wexler will not get this through unless enough members of Congress sign on to it. And if enough members of Congress sign on to it, then basically what's happening is Congress is standing up on their back legs and saying, okay, we're going to actually act like humans here rather than like, whipped dogs. And instead of rolling over and showing our throats, we're going to stand up and say, no, Mr. Bush, and no, Mr. Cheney, you are going to have to show up. You are going to have to honor the subpoena. And by the way, we've got, John Conyers' committee is trying to hold the Congress in contempt of Congress. Another thing for refusing to acknowledge subpoenas, another thing that hopefully Nancy Pelosi will be taking care of very soon as Congress comes back into session. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
You got to pick up every snitch. The rabbit's running in. that would be the Republican primary. The Republicans in total disarray, and ain't it a marvelous thing? Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Democratic debate last night on the table for conversation. The Republican primaries yesterday in Michigan on the table. Oh, the Democratic primary, for that matter. You know, a lot of interesting things going on, broadly speaking, politically speaking. Not to mention a lot of a lot of things in the news. One that I thought was particularly interesting is this piece that was. This was in, this is Interpress Service was the news service on this thing. The U.S. military, you've heard about, we're doing alliances with the Sunnis. The Sunnis, of course, Saddam Hussein was a Sunni. The Sunnis are a minority in Iraq. And the de-Ba'athification and the overthrow of Saddam, the Sunnis were controlling the country. The Shias are the majority. The Shia kind of have taken, well, the Shia have essentially taken over now the government. Al-Maliki is a Shia. And he's very concerned about Sunnis having guns. And we, the U.S. military, over the objections of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, have armed 80,000 recruits. Our goal is to hit 85,000, who we are paying with our tax dollars, $300 a month. The old, average income in Iraq used to be about $500 a month. That was the average middle class income. So $300 a month is not chump change. It's like in the United States, maybe the equivalent of $25,000 a year. We're paying these guys $300 a month to create Sunni militia that are called awakening forces. And this, not this so-called phony surge, appears to be the thing that has calmed down the violence. But it's calmed down the violence because now you don't. Now we're just, it's like, now what we've done is we've filled the room with gasoline and we've handed matches to all the parties, but they're all in the same room full of gasoline. And it's going to be, how long is this going to last? And then Bush goes over to the Middle East and says, please, please lower the price of oil. We'll sell you weapons. We'll sell you weapons. And the price of oil went down a buck yesterday, as I recall. 1-866-303-2270. Len in New York City. Hey, Len, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Nobody takes into account the fact that if Muqtada al-Sadr ever wanted to start a war against us, they've got all the time to plan, and it would be a massacre
Oh, absolutely. And it's not if he ever. It's when. I mean, he has already declared war against us. What we are in war right now with Muqtada al-Sadr and who basically runs the largest Sunni or Shia militia in the country. What we are in is a ceasefire, a truce, a temporary truce that he has declared.
Right, and they're going to tell us we don't want to be another Philippines being plundered.
Yeah.
But I called,
And they fought us in the Philippines for 40 years, by the way. Let us not forget, after the Spanish-American War. 40 years they fought us in the Philippines.
Right.
Continue.
You were talking about who would be, Romney might not be so easy to run against. But I could imagine, my first choice for any presidential candidate would be Feingold for vice president. But imagine if during the debates, if it were Hillary or if it were Barack who turned to him and said, there's not one person who would doubt after all of the attack ads you've run against everyone and all of the, positions you've changed. There's no doubt amongst anyone that you want to be president. But likewise, I don't think we could find one person who actually knows what you would actually do once you're president. And, I don't even know if you do.
But the problem is that the same could have been said about both Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. Both of them were pro-abortion, then they were against abortion. They were pro-union, then they were against unions. Both of them had held all these different positions. But what Reagan did and Bush did was they brought in, and Bush against Dukakis successfully, what they brought in basically the Lee Atwater machine, the Lee Atwater mentality. I mean, they brought in actually physically Lee Atwater and his protege, Karl Rove. But they brought in that mentality of slash and burn, lie like crazy, confuse the American public. And as I said earlier, 93% of decisions made in general elections are made based on feelings, not on issues.
But I think that's a good thing. If it were Barack, I think that's a good thing, because I think the reason that he's risen in the polls matching Hillary now is simply because everyone's gut feeling is that he is, you know, even if they don't think he has enough experience, that's, you know, as they ponder it, their gut feeling is that this guy seems right.
I agree.
So
I agree. All I'm saying is that right now what I'm hearing in the Democratic debates is the Democrats taking on each other. And what I'm hearing in the Republican debates is every single Republican debate is mostly about bashing the Democrats.
But and that's okay, because the people, I mean, I think from everything we've seen and heard so far, and everything that's going wrong, you know, with the economy that doesn't look like it's going to have a chance to turn around, you know, that won't be a problem, because things are going to be obviously so bad that anything the Republican had actually defended that's gone on is, you know, it's going to be repudiated by just simple fact.
No, yes, and the Republicans are going to figure out a way to blame it on the Democrats. I guarantee
it's going to be too hard.
Len, I hope you're right, and I'm wrong. I sure hope you're right and I'm wrong. But,
and, one other thing about Wexler.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry to talk about everything, but that got me thinking. I'm not in such a hurry to hold hearings, but I think that we could argue that Bush has turned this world, I mean this country, into such a an upside down state of what its intention was, that after he leaves office, we should hold hearings and, in fact, slowly make the case that probably could be made that, you know, he should be going to jail, just like you might have done in Argentina or any other country where the leader had usurped and perverted the power of the
state. I agree. Although my recollection is that in the case of in Argentina, I want to say Perón, it wasn't Pinochet. Thank you. It wasn't Argentina who got him. It was the UK. You know, I mean, it was the international community that went after Pinochet. But
we could drag this out well after the elections and just bring it to the light of day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just a question of having enough people.
Yep, Len, well said, and something that we do need that disinfectant. Andre in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Andre.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. I'm one of the majority who voted in 2006 to start the hearing. And I want to say to Senator Wexler two things. One thing, you have the full support of the American people. Don't let anyone fool you.
Yeah.
Second thing, when these people come out and attack you for being divisive, I'd like you to remember the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched, persons, or things to be seized.
Andre, you know, I'll never interrupt you if you're quoting one of the part of the Bill of Rights, that being the Fourth Amendment, of course. And I agree with you. We all stand behind Wexler, but we have to get over to WexlerWantsHearings.com and sign that petition and call your member of the House of Representatives. Each one of us has one. And if you don't know who your member of the House of Representatives is, go to callcongress.org, which will point you to a page on my website where I've got a list of toll-free numbers for Capitol Hill. Call one of those numbers, or call the main number if you want to pay for the phone call. The main number is 202-225-3121. But go to callcongress.org, pick up the phone number there, call the switchboard on Capitol Hill, and just say, I'm not sure exactly who my member of the House of Representatives is, but my zip code is, in my case here, I would be 973, 97213, and say, here's my zip code, and would you please tell me who my member of Congress is? And they will say, oh, your member of Congress is so-and-so, and they'll connect you. And that's what you need to do with that. Alan in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. We've talked before. This is last night, Blue Wave NJ, along with Garden State Equality, held our own debate last night in Montclair. And we had representatives from all of the candidates. Mayor Cory Booker of Newark was representing Obama. State Senator Nia Gill represented Hillary Clinton. State Senator Joseph Vitale represented John Edwards. And a gentleman named Stuart Hutchinson was representing Dennis Kucinich. Mm-hmm. And we had a straw poll at the end of it. We had almost 600 people there.
Wow.
We had 410 people on the straw poll responding, and the numbers were Obama had 170 votes in, 41.5%. Clinton had 99, 24.1%. Edwards, 94, 22.9%. Dennis had 30 for 7.3. And seventeen people were still undecided. But it was an amazingly lively evening that we had. And we had no idea how many people were going to show up because we didn't know when we scheduled it that we'd have a conflict going on with the candidates debate.
Sure. Yeah.
There, people walked away because there was just no room inside.
Well, that's wonderful, Alan. Alan, I'm just curious real quickly because we have to take a break in about 5 seconds here. Do you think that the votes were reflecting the actual preference for the candidates or how articulate the surrogates were?
I think overall what it showed me was that, yes, there are people who candidates, but it showed me the energy level
The enthusiasm there. Alan, I'm sorry your phone is breaking up, but I get it. And God bless you. It's wonderful what you guys are doing. 45 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. The Tom Hartman Program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199 fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. And by the sponsors on your local program as well as the national sponsors you hear on this show. Let them know you're listening. That's how you can support our program. And thanks so much for participating. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Lariva in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hey, Lariva, welcome to the program.
Hi. Actually, my name is Marina.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My last name is what you just mentioned.
Oh, I'm sorry.
However, that's okay. Hey, I'm pretty nervous. You know, you're a rock star as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank
and,
you.
I enjoy listening to you. It's just amazing how much you know, the history of the things that you know. It's mind-boggling. Anyway. The one thing I wanted to mention was I got an email about Barack Obama being a Muslim and all the other things that were mentioned regarding that. The thing that kind of struck me a little bit was, you know, in this time and age right now, you know, you mentioned the word Muslim or Islam or the Quran, and it's really disturbing how in this country they're not regarded very highly. And I guess the thing that kind of upsets me is that, yes, Barack Obama is a Christian, and if he was Muslim, he wouldn't have a chance. But I guess that's what really disturbs me is that.
But that's the argument that the Republicans will make if he's the nominee,
is that he
was born, his father was a Muslim, his middle name is Hussein, figure it out for yourself. That's how the Republicans will put it together. And I'm telling you, for a whole lot of, you know, six-pack beer-drinking, shotgun in the back of the pickup truck guys all across the United States, you're gonna get yes, absolutely.
Well, I heard your dialogue a while ago when you were in an airport and you talked to
the guy at the bar next to me. Yeah,
yeah, and it's just so it just makes me really sad and sick. So that aside, and I realize that you know he wouldn't stand a chance. But I hope that this country someday in the future comes to terms with it. Doesn't matter what color, what race, even if you're agnostic or whatever. I mean, I think
we really do need to be bringing ourselves to be coming together. And I that's what's so, frankly, what I so love about Barack Obama's message. And to a smaller extent, Hillary Clinton and John Edwards are saying the same thing. But he's putting it front and center. I think it's a marvelous thing. I've got to move along. Ellen Ratner's here from the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you so much for calling, though. Ellen Ratner, TalkRadioNews.com. What's going on in Washington, D.C.?
Well, it's Washington, it's New York, and it's the world. There is that Iran threat again. General General Henry Obering said that the missile defense system in Europe needs to happen, he said, because it's new urgency because Iran wants to produce long-range missiles.
Oh,
meanwhile, here where I am today at the United Nations, it looks like the Security Council is going to take up maybe another resolution on additional sanctions on Iran within the next few weeks.
Now, at the same time, if you go to commondreams.org, you discover that the headline, the lead story, and this is a story, not an editorial, is how the Pentagon planted a false Hormuz story. And they lay it out, how the whole thing got planted, this whole thing.
They are beating the drum,
yeah,
for sure.
Now, I also noticed that the ACLU is pointing to a Minnesota Supreme Court ruling that if you are in a closed stall in a public restroom, you have the reasonable Fourth Amendment right expectation of privacy. And therefore, what Larry Craig was doing because the door wasn't open was okay. The ACLU has come to Larry Craig's defense that it's okay to have sex with somebody in the closed bathroom.
Well, yes, you know, he is actually getting a lot of support from unlikely places, although he still votes absolutely the wrong way and, of course, has decided not to resign.
Yeah.
Speaking of Republicans, the earmark game. John Boehner said in his House Republican conference that House Republicans are going to have to draw a line on earmarks or prepare for permanent minority status. And he also said if we don't get serious soon, we are basically going to go nowhere. Now, not unrelated to Republicans, but you have to feel bad about the poor whales and other marine life. The president today exempted the Navy from restrictions on a law that would restrict using sonar off the California coast. A court said that it violates Coastal Zone Management Act, but the Bush administration is going to push through on that as well.
You mean to hell with the law, full speed ahead?
That's right.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Several other things. Steny Hoyer today is going to meet with the Republicans on a stimulus package. He's going to be meeting with Roy Blunt of Missouri and John Boehner of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And
he'll be on this program in about a half hour, in fact.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, the Republican businesses, and you should ask them about this, the Republicans are saying that they want a small business corporate tax cut rate to 25%. That is their answer to the stimulus situation.
Hmm. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what Congressman Hoyer says about that. President Bush becomes a blogger today. The White House is going to release the president's first blog today.
George Bush knows how to type?
Well, no, they actually said that he is going to be, good you asked that question, Tom, he's actually going to be dictating it and taking questions via dictation.
I see. With the speechwriter sitting next to him.
That's right. Afghanistan, Secretary Gates said he thinks that NATO forces in southern Afghanistan don't know how to combat guerrilla insurgencies, and he named by name Canada, Britain, and the Netherlands. Also, now they are thinking of restricting residents that cater to Westerners in Kabul because they are afraid of people coming in with suicide bombing.
Yeah, well, Afghanistan, whoever had the idea that Afghanistan could be successfully occupied has apparently never bothered to read history. So I guess we'll have to leave it at that. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great talking with you today. 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your phone calls and more news of the day right after the news here at the top of the hour. Stick around, and then we'll have Steny Hoyer at the bottom in the next hour.
Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program. The Tom Hartman Program. Now, speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Oh, my. Hillary Clinton last night. I have to keep playing this because I know that CBS won't. I know ABC won't.
I'm pretty sure NBC won't, even though they were sponsoring the thing. But after all, it's General Electric.
President Bush is over in the Gulf now begging the Saudis and others to drop the price of oil. How pathetic.
Oh, pathetic. Yeah. By the way, my debate with Jonah Goldberg, Is There Liberal Fascism, is up from Go Left TV. It's on our homepage at TomHartmann.com. It's also over at GoLeft.TV. And also on our homepage at TomHartmann.com, you can find the results of our straw poll that we held yesterday. We do these every couple weeks here on this program, have been for a number of months. And you can, if you want to find out who had how many votes during the 5 minutes we had the phone lines open and took calls from literally all over the country. If you were listening, you could hear me calling out the area codes one after the other, and very rarely was it more than was the same one, you know, twice in a row. I think last night, that moment when Hillary decided to take on the Republicans, I would love to hear more of that coming from both Barack Obama and John Edwards. Just broadly speaking, I think that this is a debate that really represented well all of these candidates. Here's John Edwards from last night.
It's not enough to talk about the extraordinary service of men and women who are wearing the uniform and have worn the uniform of the United States of America. Tonight, across this country, 200,000 men and women who wore our uniform and served this country patriotically, veterans, will go to sleep under bridges and on grates. We have men and women coming back from Iraq with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, other kind of emotional problems, many with serious physical injuries. We have families who are here at home while they serve in Iraq, who are having a terrible time paying for child care, paying the bills. We have reservists and members of the Guard who go to serve and get paid 50, 60 cents on the dollar for what they were making in their civilian jobs. What are we going to do about this? Every man and woman who comes back from Iraq or Afghanistan deserves to have a thorough, comprehensive evaluation of their medical needs, including mental health needs and physical health needs. Every one of them ought to get job training if they need it and additional education if they need it. We, America, you know, we should help them find a job. They didn't leave us on our own. We shouldn't leave them on their own. And we need to narrow this gap between civilian pay and military pay and help these families with their child care. And then finally, for all the veterans who have served this country, we need a guaranteed stream of funding for the Veterans Administration so we don't have veterans waiting 6 months or a year to get the health care that they deserve.
He also last night called for raising the minimum wage to, as I recall, $9 an hour or in that neighborhood. And you know, good on him, a fine thing for that. Barack Obama last night.
This kind of thing.
Well, look, first of all, let's make...
This is in response to the Barack. There's this nasty email going around about how you're a Muslim and you won't take the Pledge of Allegiance and you were sworn in the Quran. I'm telling you, this viral lie that is going to become the big lie if Barack Obama is the Democratic nominee, this is going to be the thing. And so last night, finally, for the first time, he addressed it head on.
Make clear what the facts are. I am a Christian. I have been sworn in with a Bible.
I think
I pledge allegiance and lead the Pledge of Allegiance sometime in the United States Senate when I'm presiding. I haven't been there lately because I've been in Iowa and New Hampshire. But, you know, look, in the Internet age, there are going to be lies that are spread all over the place. I have been victimized by these lies. Fortunately, the American people are, I think, smarter than folks give them credit for. And, you know, it's a testament. These emails were going out in Iowa, they were going out in New Hampshire, and we did just fine. If we didn't do well, for example, in New Hampshire, it wasn't because of these emails, it was because we didn't do what we needed to do in our campaign. So my job is to tell the truth, to be straight with the American people about how I intend to end climate change, what I'm going to do with respect to providing health care for every American, how we're going to provide tax relief to hardworking Americans who are really feeling the pinch, and to present my vision for where the country needs to go. If I'm doing that effectively, then I place my trust in the American people that they will sort out the lies from the truth and they will make a good decision.
Now, the problem with that is that that email is going out to Republicans, and who are going to be very willing to read it. He's saying that email did not affect what happened in the New Hampshire or Iowa primaries. And it probably didn't, or if it did, it was a very small effect, because very few Democrats were getting 10, 20 copies of it. The Republicans I know, and the Republican lists that I'm on, because as a talk show host, I'm on lists on both sides, partisan lists on both sides. The Republicans are slamming this thing. People who are on Republican talking point mail, email lists, they're getting four or five of these things a day, and variations of them. The thing is mutating. It's changing. And it's going to get worse. This is the very worst type of character assassination. And this is what's coming down the road from the Republican Party. I guarantee you. Scott in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom. It's great to talk to you again. I really appreciate all the work you're doing, and I really hope you keep it up.
Thank you, Scott, and thanks for listening on WPTT there. What's up?
Not a problem. I really believe that George Bush is really a puppet dictator, and Cheney is really the one that's pulling the strings behind the scene.
Well, this is why I agree with Robert Wexler at WexlerWantsHearings.com that we have to have hearings, and why I'm encouraging everybody to go to callcongress.org, get a phone number.
I already called my congressman.
Yeah, and very nicely and very respectfully say, I don't know if this guy should be impeached or not, but I really think that we should have hearings into whether or not there are crimes here. And
Believe it or not, when I called my congressman, I asked the secretary if she was getting a lot of calls on this, and believe it or not, she told me that they're getting calls pro and con. So believe it or not, there are people that are still out there supporting him, amazing as it is.
But, is your congressman a Democrat?
Yes.
Huh. I would be suspicious of that answer, frankly, because
I just asked her if she was getting a lot of calls about this subject,
yeah.
And she volunteered that she was getting calls pro and con.
Yeah, but that might be like her generic response to anything, you know, her way of avoiding controversy.
Well, that's not
or
saying how many she's getting either yeah. way, so I
yeah.
understand.
And she doesn't know that you might not be a reporter for, you know, CBS News or something.
Exactly.
She doesn't want to put her foot in her mouth, so she's trying to take a middle road. But
exactly,
because I'd be amazed if they're getting hearings, telephone calls. I'd just be amazed.
I mean, also, it amazes me that a lot of people just are still blind to see what's going on in this country. I'm a small business owner. The economy affects me directly. With the housing market slowing, I do plumbing and remodeling on my own. I have my own business. Mm-hmm. With the housing market being so bad, that directly affects me because I did do work before for people that bought, invested in houses, and flipped them. Mm-hmm. A lot of people obviously aren't doing that anymore since the market is so bad.
Right.
So that has directly affected my business. In the same token, since I am a self-employed person, health care is very important to me also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, thank goodness my wife does have health care where she is, and I buy mine through her. Well, actually, she buys for me. It comes out of her paycheck. But anyhow, I mean, it just amazes me, and I know you've stated this a dozen times at least, and I'll state it again, that we are the only industrial country in the world that does not have national health care.
Yeah.
And that truly
amazes
me.
It's obscene. It's an absolute obscenity. Scott, thanks.
Thank you very much. Keep up the good work, Tom.
You're welcome. Thank you, and thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Tony in Michigan. Hey, Tony.
Hi, Tom. I want to dig into the actual nitty-gritty of the logistics of this whole thing.
What the whole thing being impeachment?
The holding of the hearings.
Right.
What has to happen for these hearings to take place? I understand that John Conyers makes the decision. Is that true?
If the Judiciary Committee is holding the hearings, and I believe that it would be their purview, then, yeah, that would be true. But my understanding is that John Conyers is not opposed to holding these hearings, that the leadership, Nancy Pelosi, basically, has been taking the position that the hearings should not be held. And, go ahead.
Excuse me. If John Conyers has the actual final decision, then he can do the right thing, regardless of what Nancy Pelosi is threatening him with.
Well, you know, there's the reality, and then there's the political reality. And the reality may be that he has the final decision, but the political reality is that Nancy Pelosi has the final decision.
Well, I think John Conyers should do the right thing, regardless of what, even if it costs him his chairmanship on the committee or even the reelection.
Well, this is where, I mean, you've got a number of members of Congress now who have signed on to this thing with Robert Wexler about let's just have hearings and see what's here. And this is why it's so important that you call your member of the House of Representatives, and that every single person listening call your member of the House of Representatives and say, please join with Robert Wexler in asking for hearings. And I'm not calling for the impeachment of these guys. I would just like hearings to find out if crimes have been committed. 16 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman Program, taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day.
5 days a week.
In the sunset, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, outstanding young man. Oh, yeah, I think you'll do. And so I pulled off my hat and said, imagine that. Hey, I'm me working for you.
I think we're figuring it out. We're figuring it out. In fact, we're figuring out how they're trying to rewrite history. As our conservative alert for the day, Glenn Beck, along with Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal.
I tell you, I said on my radio show today, I'm beginning to come to a place where I love my grandfather, but I just want to slap him across the face for liking FDR. I think that was one evil son of a bitch.
Well, he certainly left us the bills, no doubt
he
about it.
He sure did, and he was the first one to go in and say, hey, let's nationalize health care and energy and everything else. Yeah. And made this depression go on and on and on for a decade.
And he was the one, Glenn, who was the first president in history who said, you know, deficits are good.
Yeah.
Let's run up the deficit. Well, let's live high on the hogs. Well, and then we'll let the future generations, our kids, pay for it.
These guys are absolutely hallucinating. I mean, this is so sick and twisted. First of all, Franklin Roosevelt never said deficits are good. Roosevelt ran a deficit during the last major deficit during the last year of the World War II in order to pay for the war. Roosevelt, you know, obviously he said the government during the Great Depression has to be the employer of last resort. He got us out of the Great Depression. He established the foundation for the biggest and strongest and most powerful middle class that not just the United States has ever seen, but the world has ever seen, which has been systematically deconstructed ever since 1980 when Ronald Reagan and these other, I'm tempted to use the phrase that Glenn Beck himself used, but I'm too much of a gentleman. I will not. Maybe I'm not too much of a gentleman, but in any case, I'm just astounded. These guys going after Franklin Roosevelt.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
So they're attacking Roosevelt for borrowing, by the way, from us. Kids in schools. I remember when I was a little kid, it was the tail end of this, you could buy U.S. savings bonds, right? Borrowing from us in order to fund World War II to save the world from the Nazis. They're attacking him for that. But it's just fine that Ronald Reagan borrowed trillions of dollars to give it to his good buddies for his phony Star Wars program. Or that Bush can borrow trillions of dollars to give to his good buddies over at Halliburton and Bechtel and other and Blackwater and whatnot for his phony war is long over, his ongoing occupation, so that he can get political capital. It is just disgusting. Obsidian in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Obsidian, what's on your mind today?
Well, I have to thank you.
Okay.
Pure and simple. Well, the reason being is that, one, I don't usually watch the usual media outlets on TV because about only 10% of it really is worthwhile watching and listening.
Mm-hmm.
And when you played a snippet about Hillary's comments about Bush being so pathetic over in Saudi Arabia, I thought, you know, that sounds typical of her considering the conversational meetings that she has with Rockefeller and the Bilderbergs. I mean, who's she kidding? Who's more pathetic than the other?
Well, I think Bush is pretty pathetic. I think that's
well,
the bottom
that's
line.
Well, that's true, but you know, she's falling right in the same batch with him.
Well, I'm sorry, Obsidian. Thank you for your opinion, but I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. And here is what Hillary
President
said.
President Bush is over in the Gulf now, begging the Saudis and others to drop the price of oil. How pathetic!
There you go, Karen in Alameda, California. Hey, Karen.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I have comments. The first has to do with Obama and his Christianity. I just think it's a shame that he could not have said, I am a Christian, but what if I were not?
Because
it shouldn't matter. It's just a shame.
It would have been viewed as waffling. I agree with you that in America today, like Keith Ellison in Minnesota, an American Muslim should be able to stand up and say, I'm a Muslim, vote for me because of my issues, and the good people of Minnesota did, God bless them, and they sent Keith Ellison to the United States House of Representatives, and in all probability they'll send him back again this year because he's a good man and he's doing a good job.
I hope so. And something else, I just want to talk about John Edwards and the post-debate coverage last night.
Mm-hmm.
I would like all of your viewers, and you too, if you didn't notice, to go back and look at the post 15 minutes when they had the candidate signing autographs.
They never showed a shot of Edwards.
That's right.
Yep.
And every time
Edwards' name came up, Chris Matthews would interrupt the person and change the subject.
What I would like you to do, and every progressive host, if you could, we all need to bombard MSNBC with emails and phone calls about this. There are millions of John Edwards supporters who need to find a way to be able to do something about this media blackout of him.
Yeah, it's very well said, Karen. And a media blackout is exactly what it is. John Edwards' comments about corporate America are not being reported. Go over to commondreams.org. There's a brilliant article. I think Harvey Wasserman wrote it about the public opinion polls on corporate America. Well, in fact, I'll get into that in a little bit. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I want the truth from you. Give me the truth.
Okay, here's the truth. November 2007, Harris poll. This is Robert Weissman's piece over at commondreams.org. 2007, Harris poll found that fewer than 15% of the U.S. population believes any of the following industries to be generally honest and trustworthy. Only 3% of Americans think that the tobacco industry is trustworthy. Only 3% think the oil companies are trustworthy. Only 5% think that managed care companies like HMOs are trustworthy. Only 7% of Americans think that health insurance companies are honest and trustworthy. Only 10% think telephone companies are honest and trustworthy. You go right on through the board. Life insurance companies, 10%. Online retailers, 10%. Pharmaceutical and drug companies, 11%. Car manufacturers, 11%. Airlines, 11%. Packaged food companies, 12%. Electric and gas utilities seem to do the best at 15%. The vast majority of Americans, 15% more or less, 85% would be the reciprocal of that. 85% of Americans think that we can't trust big business. Now, just to put that in context, as Robert Weissman does, 18% of Americans think that the sun revolves around the earth. 79% of American adults believe the earth revolves around the sun, which it does. 18% think that the sun revolves around the earth. And 15% think that corporations are trustworthy. Big, large, powerful corporations are trustworthy and honest. Gee, do we have a little bit of a disconnect here? 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Ralph in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hey, Ralph, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, too bad they didn't ask how many think the Pentagon is trustworthy.
Yeah, you're right.
military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
No, the thing is, though, what I wanted to talk about is that we owe a debt of gratitude to the rank and file in NSA and the Navy for being able to concentrate on the primaries and not have all the oxygen sucked out by a war in Iran.
Yes.
Our Navy,
I absolutely agree with you. By issuing the National Intelligence Estimate that actually and truthfully, honestly said what it said, and by the people who threatened to quit their jobs if the truth didn't come out.
Well, more than that, Tom, just specifics. You compare what happened in the Persian Gulf recently with what happened in the Tonkin Gulf.
Yep.
And, I mean, it took NASA 50 years to admit that there was no attack order in the Tonkin Gulf.
Not NASA, the NSA, yeah.
Right, and in the Persian Gulf, it was less than a month. They said there was no attack order.
That's right.
And you also look at the Navy's participation. I mean, the second Tonkin Gulf incident now, everybody's finally admitted never occurred.
Yep.
When there was a patrol boat that was nearing a Navy ship, according to what the papers say, the Navy, instead of shooting the patrol boat, fired a warning shot. Mm-hmm. That's a big difference, too.
Yep.
But I think, Tom, what we need to make is two distinctions. One is between what I would call the top brass, those who owe their promotions to the Bush administration, and those who are the rank and file who haven't.
Right.
And also, I think we actually learned something from the Vietnam War, and that is that the military oath and the CIA oath is to support and defend the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
not to support the president.
That's correct, as are all the, you know, right across
absolutely.
The board.
Every,
in fact, the president's oath is to
yes,
support
right.
and defend the Constitution. Not to support and defend you and me, as Bush would want it to. He wants to say that he's the top cop, he's the guy, he's got all the guns in his hands, and that's his job, is to stand there between us and the terrorists. No, I'm sorry. The job that he swore to undertake, as did every other member of Congress and the Supreme Court, is to defend the Constitution of the United States.
And that's what those rank-and-file people are doing over in Iraq and in the Persian Gulf. And I think, again, we owe them a special vote of thanks. And when you talk with Hoyer or anybody else, ask what they're doing to protect the jobs and the, not being sent into the killing fields
yeah.
of those people.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee from my Vietnam experience, that's what people that blow whistles end up doing.
Yep, well said, Ralph. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Nancy in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Nancy.
Hi. So much to say, but I'd call to say when you play Senator Clinton's begging the Saudis and how pathetic that is of President Bush, try to find the comment that he made when he was campaigning against Al Gore, when he said that the American people never had to worry about oil or gas prices because all he had to do was do some jawboning with his friends, the Saudis, and that
You're
was
right.
8 years ago.
You're right.
I think that great comparison of those two comments could say an awful lot to the American people.
Yep, I agree. And again, Hillary Clinton is not my first choice on the Democratic side, but I will campaign. I will work for her if she's the nominee. But I think this is such a priceless quote. And
because I
know that the mainstream media is not going to play it, here it is one more time.
President Bush is over in the Gulf now, begging the Saudis and others to drop the price of oil. How pathetic.
Well said, Hillary.
And nobody is playing the jawboning quote of 8 years ago about
yeah.
how he
yeah.
will keep the prices low.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
failed in everything.
Yeah. Well
thank
said,
you,
Nancy.
Tom.
Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Jay in Simi Valley, California. Hey, Jay.
Hi. I've got a comment to make relative to the campaigns for the nomination of the next president. They keep talking about experience and how important it is. Well, virtually every presidential historian says that there are three great presidents in the history of this country. One of them was Abraham Lincoln. And I would remind people that Abraham Lincoln, prior to gaining the presidency, had exactly 2 years of experience in the United States House of Representatives during the American War with Mexico, 1846 and 48, and that was it.
Yep. You're absolutely right. I would submit to you, A, I'm not saying that Barack Obama shouldn't be the nominee or shouldn't be president because he's inexperienced. The point that I, and in fact, I think he's a great candidate, and I'll support him if he's the nominee of the party. I was very impressed by him last night and have been throughout the campaign. The point that I've made is that when people say he's just like Jack Kennedy, and frankly, I was one of the first ones to say that. I was quoted in Huffington Post for about a week there. You know, as Hartman says, John Edwards will be the next FDR, Barack Obama the next JFK. The analogy is imperfect in that, you know, he is a brilliant orator like John Kennedy is. He is an inspirational speaker like John Kennedy was. And most importantly, he's one of these people who reaches out and talks about all of the people. It's all of us together making decisions and doing things. Whereas I think that Hillary Clinton is a little more,
I'm going to be the executive, I'm going to run the show kind of thing. And John Edwards is a little in between of both of those. He's like, I'm going to run the show and I want to involve the people. But in that regard, I think Barack Obama is like a lot like John Kennedy. But John Kennedy had been in office for 14 years when he came into office. He'd served a couple of terms in the House of Representatives,
exactly.
And he was in his second terms in the Senate. I would also submit that the Times then, you know, 150 years ago, and the times now are very different times. And there are people, you know, having lived in Atlanta for 13 years and our kids gone through the southern schools where they teach a very different history of the Civil War than what I learned growing up in Lansing, Michigan. there are people who to this day, including some school teachers in the South, are condemning Abraham Lincoln because when he first got into the Civil War, he thought apparently that it was only going to last a few weeks or maybe a few months at the very most and the South would roll right over and, you know, badly miscalculated. Now, I realize saying that immediately, 1,000 brilliant Civil War scholars are going to call me up and point out all, you know, all the nuance and how wrong that is or isn't or whatever. And I don't present myself as a Civil War scholar or anything like that. But and again, I'm not saying that Lincoln's inexperience led to the Civil War. But those are the kinds of arguments that the Republicans
will be making. South Carolina went out before Lincoln was even sworn into office.
Yeah. Actually, as a matter of point of fact, my point is that those are the arguments that the Republicans are going to be making, and we need to be ready for them. We need to be insulating ourselves in advance. We need, and the Obama campaign needs to be preparing the talking points against them. You know, by and large, all of the candidates. I mean, every single one of these candidates has to be. You know, last night there was all this talk about, oh, let's not get into racism and sexism. Fine. Okay. So you guys aren't going to do it. You think Mitt Romney's not going to do it? You think John McCain's not going to do it? You think the heirs to the Karl Rove mindset are not going to do it? You're crazy if you think they're not going to do it. It is coming. The Republicans are going to come and they are going to beat us over the head with, if it's John Edwards with his haircut and his smile and a good looking guy like that, he must have 35 mistresses. Or if it's Hillary Clinton, it's going to be, look at it, she's a woman, and they're going to be playing the old Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox ad that Rush Limbaugh used to run as a parody. And if it's Barack Obama, oh my God, his middle name is Hussein and his skin is brown. I mean, that they're going to be doing that, and we've got to be ready and we've got to be able to blow that back and say, how dare you use those kinds of base, sick, twisted attacks against candidates and not do what John Kerry did and say, oh, well, we're above that. We're not going to do that. Janice in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Janice.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. We have about a minute before the break.
Okay, I'll be quick. I hope people don't hate me for this, but I'm one of those people that started an immigration process in 2004 hoping I would want to turn back. But after seeing the way people blindly allow Barack Obama to get away with things he's allowed to be a corporatist, he's not anti-war, it's really, really scary to me. And last night, the way he portrayed black men, I'm married to a black man. He is the most wonderful father and husband. And Barack Obama did a disservice to my husband, and I don't like him for that.
Okay, Janice, thank you for weighing in. My take on it was that he was kind of taking the Bill Cosby approach, but not being African-American, I don't have the insights, perhaps, that you have, Janice, and I thank you very much for sharing. 45 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman Program, the true people's radio. Tom Hartman.
Yeah. Hold on tight to your dream. Yeah. Hold on tight to your dream. Yeah. When you see the shadows falling,
sounds like a plan to me. Tom Hartman Program brought to you by you, our listeners, supporting our sponsors, our local sponsors, our national sponsors, and our sponsor, SEIU 1199, 200,000 health and hospital workers fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. Congressman Steny Hoyer on the line with us from Washington, D.C. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
I am so glad to have you on. I understand that you've been meeting with the leadership of your party and also with people from the other party about an economic stimulus package.
The speaker invited to her office both John Boehner and Roy Blunt, who are the two leaders in the on the Republican side, and Mr. Clyburn and myself. So the five of us met. It was a very positive meeting in the sense that everybody agreed we need to act quickly to try to help working families in this country who are facing a downturn in the economy, a stretch in their family budget, higher gas costs, and having a tough time. I think that it is the meeting was a basis for moving forward. We all agreed that we're going to put our staff together working, and that we're talking about days in which we a few days in which we can come to an agreement and hopefully move forward in a stimulus package that's bipartisan and as has been said, timely, targeted, and temporary.
That would be a marvelous thing. We're talking with House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, also representing Maryland's 5th Congressional District, hoyer.house.gov. Congressman, starting with Franklin Roosevelt, we kind of got it in the United States that the most effective way to stimulate the economy is to put the money in the hands of people who are going to spend it, average working people. And ever since Ronald Reagan, there's been this counter argument that no, the best way to stimulate the economy is to put the money in the hands of very, very wealthy people who will then somehow, quote, create jobs, end quote, as if, you know, we're all just sitting around waiting for a factory to be built. I thought that jobs are created as a result of demand, and the demand came about from working people having enough money to spend. There's this fundamental philosophical difference between you on the Democratic side and the Republicans who are still following Reaganomics. How's that going to resolve?
You know, Tom, as someone who voted consistently against the economic programs that you referred to and have done so during this administration, you know, we had a recession at the end of the last Bush administration. We're on the brink of a real slowdown and maybe a tipping in this administration. But, you know, this is not a time for partisan politics. It's time to help the working families. And you ask, how are we going to do that?
How do you bridge that gap? Yeah.
Frankly, what I heard in the meeting that we had was a real understanding that the people who need to be helped are working families. They need to be helped immediately. They need to be helped not with a tax cut for wealthy Americans, but for dollars in their pockets so, as you say, they can create demand. So I was I come out of this meeting with a very positive sense. Now, experience, of course, does not lead me to be euphoric, but I think there's a real sense that the situation is such that bipartisan action is necessary and that it needs to be stimulus. And stimulus is getting money in the hands of people who, A, need it, and who, B, are going to spend it.
Great. Well, sir, we congratulate you on your efforts, you and the speaker. Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and good luck.
Thanks, Tom,
good
very
luck.
Much.
Good luck
Appreciate
and Godspeed. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, thank you for being with us, sir.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Good talking with you. 1-866-303-2270, our number. Ryan in San Luis Obispo, California. Hey, Ryan, what's on your mind today?
Well, I've had an idea for kind of a message for the Democrats this year, and I would say almost everything you've talked about this morning fits into this. So, and the idea is we hear all the talk about change and voters need wanting change. And when I hear that, I think, no, actually, I want less change. I want things to change back. And a better word for that is I would like to see things restored and hear our leaders talk about restoring things. And the list.
I think the word change has been pretty much burned into the lexicon. We're not,
yeah,
if we're talking about messaging right now, change is the one that even the Republicans have adopted.
Well, right. And what you were just talking about even a minute ago, with Congressman Hoyer, the last big batch of change we got was with Reagan, and it didn't turn out to be good change.
So
anyway, I'd like to change back. So, and the things I like, the word I like is restore, and I'd like to see us talking about restoring the middle class and restoring our ability, our economic health, and our ability to manufacture things here, and going on to restoring our, you know, constitutional law and this separation of church and state and privacy, and the list just goes on and on.
Yeah, no, it would be a fine thing, and it's an excellent list, Ryan, and your point is well taken, and I like restore. Lonnie in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Lonnie.
Hey, I'm calling
calling about asking for impeachment. I have called for many, many months asking for hearings, just hearings,
mm-hmm.
to get the thing going.
Yeah.
I've called the Democratic, the committee offices, all of them, and they've all basically said thank you very much, but we're not interested.
Right.
And I think it's interesting now because the timing that they're willing to do it now, by the time the hearings get through, we'll already be through the election cycle. And, Tom, I want to tell you thank you because I registered out of the Democratic Party in anger over this issue, and I have come back in large part to your proposing that we get actively involved, and I have recently signed back to become a Democrat, and I'm going to become a precinct manager.
Wow.
I don't know anything about
it. Good on you, Lonnie.
But I just know I'm sick of complaining about them. I mean, I actually called my own senator the other day after New Hampshire and said, when are you going to rename it the Politburo?
Yeah, well, that's good on you. Congratulations, Lonnie. Thank you very much. And I got to wrap up the show here, but thanks for the call. Coming up tomorrow and Friday, Laura Flanders will be filling in for me. God bless her. She's one of the very best talk show hosts in the business, and I'm sure you're looking forward to hearing her. I certainly am, too. And I'll be back on Monday. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. WexlerWantsHearings.com. Call your member of the House of Representatives. Tag, you're it. We'll see you on Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.